I closed the door on her and left her on the top step, with her hand resting lightly on the rail and a bare light bulb burning behind her. I checked the hallway carefully and headed back to the kitchen. The food guys were still busy in there. "You guys called Keast and Maiden?" I said. The one nearer me nodded.
"Paul Keast."
"Chris Maiden."
"I need to move your truck, Paul."
"Why?"
"Because it's in the way." The guy just looked at me.
"You told me to put it there."
"I didn't tell you to leave it there." He shrugged and rooted around on a counter and came up with his keys.
"Whatever."
I took the keys and went outside and checked the back of the truck. It was fitted out with metal racks on either side for trays of food. There was a narrow aisle running down the center. No windows. It would do. I left the rear doors open and slid into the driver's seat and fired it up. Backed it out to the carriage circle and turned it around and reversed it back to the kitchen door. Now it was facing the right way. I killed the motor but left the keys in it. Went back inside the kitchen. The metal detector beeped.
"What are they eating?" I asked.
"Lamb kebabs with rice and couscous and hummus. Stuffed grape leaves to start, baklava for dessert with coffee."
"That's Libyan?"
"It's generic. They eat it everywhere."
"I used to get that for a dollar. You're charging 55.
"Where? In Portland?"
"In Beirut."
I stepped out and checked the hallway. All quiet. I opened the basement door. Teresa Daniel was waiting right there, like an automaton. I held out my hand.
"Let's go."
She stepped out. I closed the door behind her, walked her into the kitchen. Keast and Maiden stared at her. I ignored them and walked her through. Out through the door, over to the truck. She shivered in the cold. I helped her climb into the back.
"Wait there for me now," I said.
"Very quiet, okay?" She nodded and said nothing. "I'm going to close the doors on you." She nodded again. "I'll get you out of there soon."
"Thank you."
I closed the doors on her and went back to the kitchen. Stood still and listened. I could hear talking from the dining room. It all sounded reasonably social.
"When do they eat?" I said.
20 minutes. When they're through with the drinks. There was champagne included in the $55, you know."
"Okay. Don't take offense."
I checked my watch. 45 minutes gone, 15 minutes to go. Showtime. I went back outside into the cold, slipped into the food truck and fired it up, eased it forward, slowly around the corner of the house, slowly around the carriage circle, slowly down the driveway, away from the house, through the gate, onto the road. I hit the gas, took the curves fast, jammed to a stop, level with Villanueva's Taurus, jumped out. Villanueva and Duffy were instantly out to meet me. "Teresa's in the back," I said. "She's okay, but she's all doped up." Duffy pumped her fists and jumped on me and hugged me hard, and Villanueva wrenched open the doors. Teresa fell into his arms. He lifted her down like a child. Then Duffy grabbed her away from him, and he took a turn hugging me.
"You should take her to the hospital," I said.
"We'll take her to the motel," Duffy said. "We're still off the books."
"You sure?" "She'll be okay," Villanueva said. "Looks like they gave her roofies. Probably from their dope dealer pals. But they don't last long. They flush out fast."
Duffy was hugging Teresa like a sister. Villanueva was still hugging me.
"Elliot's dead," I said. That put a real damper on the mood.
"Call ATF from the motel, if I don't call you first." They just looked at me. "I'm going back now." I turned the truck around and headed back. I could see the house ahead of me. The windows were lit up yellow. The wall lights flared blue in the mist. The truck fought the wind. Plan B, I decided. Quinn was mine, but the others could be ATF's headache. I stopped on the far side of the carriage circle and reversed down the side of the house, stopped outside the kitchen, got out and walked around the back of the house and found my coat, unwrapped the persuaders, put my coat on. I needed it. It was a cold night, and I would be on the road again in about 5 minutes. I stepped across to the dining room windows to check inside. They had closed the drapes. Makes sense, I thought. It was a wild, blustery night. The dining room would look better with closed drapes. cozier. Oriental rugs on the floor, wood paneling, silver on the linen tablecloth. I picked up the persuaders and walked back to the kitchen. The metal detector squealed. The food guys had 10 plates with stuffed grape leaves all lined up on a counter. The leaves looked dark and oily and tough. I was hungry, but I couldn't have eaten one. The way my teeth were right then would have made it impossible. I figured I would be eating ice cream for a week, thanks to Paulie. "Hold off with the food for 5 minutes, okay?" I said. Keast and Maiden stared at the shotguns. "Your keys," I said. I dropped them next to the grape leaves. I didn't need them anymore. I had the keys Beck had given me. I figured I would leave by the front door and use the Cadillac. Faster, more comfortable. I took a knife from the wooden block, used it to put a slit in the inside of my right-hand coat pocket, just wide enough to allow a persuader's barrel down into the lining. I picked the gun I had killed Harley with and holstered it there. I held the other one two-handed, took a breath, stepped into the hallway. Keast and Maiden watched me go. First thing I did was check the powder room. No point in getting all dramatic if Quinn wasn't even in the dining room. But the powder room was empty. Nobody on bathroom break. The dining room door was closed. I took another breath, then another, then I kicked it in and stepped inside and fired 2 Brennecas into the ceiling. They were like stun grenades. The twin explosions were colossal. Plaster and wood rained down. Dust and smoke filled the air. Everybody froze like statues. I leveled the gun at Quinn's chest. Echoes died away. "Remember me?" I said. Elizabeth Beck screamed in a sudden silence. I moved another step into the room and kept the muzzle on Quinn. "Remember me?" I said again. 1 second. 2. His mouth started moving.
"I saw you in Boston, on the street, a Saturday night, maybe 2 weeks ago."
"Try again." His face was completely blank. He didn't remember me. "They diagnosed amnesia," Duffy had said. "Certainly about the trauma, because that's almost inevitable. They figured he might be genuinely blank about the incident and the previous day or two." "I'm Reacher. I need you to remember me." He glanced helplessly at Beck. "Her name was Dominique." He turned back to me, stared at me, eyes wide. Now he knew who I was. His face changed. Blood drained out and fury swarmed in. And fear. The 22 scars were pure white. I thought about aiming right between them. It would be a difficult shot.